September 19th, 2011 marks 4 years of broadcasting for the Global Reality Show. In that time, we've exposed many important and invaluable pieces of information concerning the global power structure, hidden and occult text, ancient archaeology, secret societies, ETs, the priest class, and so much more. With no outside funding, sponsors, or advertisement, this places all the well-being of our work and research into the hands of people like you. In order to continue our work and to make it bigger and better, the Global Reality is having a 4-year anniversary fundraiser to take our quest of information critical mass to a new and before unseen level. Unfortunately, technology becomes aged and not much is left after paying operating costs each month. This is a very critical time to reach people, and with your financial support, we can redouble our efforts. Please visit www.theglobalreality.com today and make a safe and secure donation using our chip-in banner or PayPal donate button at the site. Why give your support to a phony political stooge when you can support real underground media by the people? I'm Josh Reeves, and this is the Global Reality Radio Network. Of the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here for another late night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. I tell you, I actually wasn't even going to have a show tonight, to be honest with you. That's why it's starting so late, because I actually had pretty much bailed out on not having one, or bailed out on having one altogether, because there was, a couple of reasons, actually. There was kind of a lack of material today, not really a lot of stuff. But I did wind up, I did a little bit more digging, wound up a few more things to get in here, get into with you here tonight. And we got a few emails, but not a lot. So I really didn't have a whole lot of material. So I was, and we also lack of support. We've had a lack of donations, lack of financial support over the past few weeks, and this week included. It makes it very difficult to get my work done when we, you know, only have a few dollars in our account. Because, our listenership's going up every day, but our support is going down. I can't understand that. We need your help right now more than ever. So please donate at the website, theglobalreality.com, where this broadcast originates from. But yeah, that's why I'm starting so late. I really had pretty much said, fuck it, I'm not doing a show tonight. And then reverse said, oh, fuck it, I am going to do a show tonight. So here I am with you tonight. So thanks for being with us. Tuesday, September 13th into Wednesday, September 14th, 2011. We've got news. We've got a few emails. We've got Lost Book of Enki. I need to confer with the chat room and find out where we're at from last night. I think I remember. I'm going from memory. Was it the top of 307 or something like that? Page 307. I want to say that's where I was. Now this is the account of how fate destiny did lead. Is that where we are? Okay. All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate that. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I remember that's where we were. We're going to be getting into that for you here tonight on the broadcast as well. If you want to send in emails during the show tonight, it's funny. I sort of was, like I said, not going to do a show. And then I started seeing 50 minutes before the showtime, I started seeing the numbers start kind of on the stream, the listenership go up. And I'm thinking, geez, it's approaching 2 o'clock in the morning, Central Time, my time. And yet the live listenership is going up. So it looks like we've got some listeners coming in from other time zones, other countries and stuff like that. So if you're listening anywhere in the world outside of the continental United States or anywhere else on the planet, thank you so much for being with us here tonight. We continue to see listenership go up all over the world, but shockingly, most of our financial support comes from mostly in the United States. Get a little bit from Canada now and again. We had one from Australia. but other than that, not a lot. But anyway, we're going to be getting into this news tonight as well. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. You want to send in some emails tonight. That's GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. Let's see what we have here in the email bag tonight. I've gotten an email from this gentleman a few times, and you know, he's one of these guys, another one of these guys who is so conditioned and beat into servitude by mainstream culture's way of thinking and the intelligentsia's way of thinking that, you know, when he hears a show like mine and hears me say the things I say, it scares the shit out of him, makes him mad. And really what it does is, more than anything, is it exposes him as being a total fucking control freak in his own life. Because only a total fucking control freak would call someone a juvenile redneck mouth over and over again, and really, I don't think he spelled juvenile, redneck, or mouth right. Well, he spelled necks, N-E-X-K, juvenile, rednecks, shit. So that alone tells you the quality of the person we're dealing with here. But this guy sent me multiple emails before saying that I needed to tone it down and not cuss and not say, you know, things like,
suck Satan's cock
and that kind of stuff like that. But he sent me a nice email calling me all kinds of names. And again, like I said, that what this exposes about this individual is that he has control issues, and he has to feel like he can control everything in his surroundings, anything he comes in contact with, even somebody's radio show he listens to. And the reason that he feels the need to do that, well, the reason that is because anytime anything is, he feels like he can't control it, he has to try and you know, because people get scared of seeing people that are really free, and people who really don't give a fuck, like me. And that scares the shit out of them. Anybody that seems to be being freer or going farther with their freedom than they are, control freaks just hate that. And, you know, sir, have you, this person's never donated any amount of money to my show, what I do, or support, or anything else. But he wants to tell me over and over again not to cuss. And says, look, sir, this is not a family show. If you want your kids to be educated about these topics, tell you what, got a novel fucking idea for you. Why don't you educate them about these ideas and these topics? It's not up to me. I'm not here to preach to your fucking kindergartners about the Illuminati. I'm here to be myself and do my thing, and that's what I do. Because I felt like a fraud, and I felt like I was being kept in a box in the past when I've been on radio networks, because I was, you know, being a confined version of myself. And once I was able to not be this confined, if you listen to my old radio shows when I was on Oracle or, you know, TruthNet Radio or We the People Radio Network or RBN or Blog Talk Radio, I've been on every kind of fucking network under the sun. you hear a very, it's a very constrained version of me. And that just made me feel like a fraud. I felt, felt like here I am getting up here every day talking to people about, reality. The name of my show is The Global Reality, but yet I'm having to be this constrained, restricted, in a box version of myself because we don't want to piss off the sponsors. Whose money of which, I'm not seeing a dime, but yet I have to plug them on my show. And it's suggested that, you do a live read and this kind of stuff, for the network. But yet, the host never sees any benefit. Oh, well, we can't say these words for the AM and FM stations. Never saw a listener uptick. Never got an email from anybody saying, hey, listen to your show on an FM station and loved it. Never got an email from that. And I just felt like, I want to have my own thing and my own platform where I can do whatever the fuck I want to do and say whatever the fuck I want to say when I want to say it and have nobody putting any restraints on me. And that's what this is. And I know that bothers the shit out of some people because some people are just programmed to want to control everything. And if they can't control every aspect of everything around them, it just drives them batshit crazy. Like I said, why are you listening then? Oh, well, you have good information, but I can't stand your information because you say, things like
suck Satan's cock
and things like that. I try to have some fun up here. I try to keep it as real as I possibly can. And I try to be myself as much as I possibly can. And that's what I'm going to continue to do. I appreciate the input. I appreciate your suggestion. But you can send me all the dirty, nasty emails and yelling at me and calling me a juvenile and not even spelling juvenile right. They make something called spell check, right? Juvenile redneck mouth. I mean, really, guy? That's how he ends his thing. I mean, really, guy? You want to talk about me for saying stuff about the vulva and suck? Say, hey, I was just reading from the Lost Book of Inky, man. Don't shoot the messenger here. So you're getting mad because I'm saying juvenile redneck shit, and then you called me guy. I mean, really, guy. Hey, guy, how's it going? What part of the country is it where they say guy? Yeah, that's up there, like. Up there where Lee Rogers lives and stuff. And it's like New Hampshire and Canada. Hey, guy, how's it going, guy? Well, you can say you can call me Jeff juvenile redneck shit all you want. And I'll call you Northern Yankee cocksucker that can't spell. How about that? Is that fair enough? Sounds like a fair trade to me. All right. So from now on, this person, John's going to call me juvenile redneck mouth, and I'm going to call him Yankee, Yankee cocksucker who can't spell. All right. That sounds fair enough to me. Wow. That takes a lot of talent. That guy must have been, I think that guy's been working his entire life to be that much of an asshole. That's a lot of work. Let's see what other emails we have here tonight. You gotta love anybody that sends an email that has this is the title of the email in big bold print. Kate Hudson is a slut. Now what does that say about me that I opened this email? You're lucky I opened this at all. I guess apparently I'm interested in anybody sending me something that says Kate Hudson is a slut. But the email really has nothing to do with that. It's from a listener. It says, Dear Josh, it's me again, Gary. Hello, me. It's me again, Gary from Alabama. I recommend Christopher Knowles as a guest. He is the author of the books Our Gods Wear Spandex, about the connection between comic book superheroes and the ancient world. Oh, yeah, there's definitely connections there. and The Secret History of Rock and Roll. He was on Red Ice late last year talking about his book, The Secret History of Rock and Roll. He's worth checking out. All right, well, I'll definitely look into his work. Thanks, thanks, Kate Edson is a slut there. Yeah, that's funny. Here's an email from Chad. We talked about Chad last night. He related some information about his family members being Mormon, and I said, he said it was on his mother's side of the family, and that's interesting because, I mean, it's, you know, Chad, but both, the Mormons are all bloodline, so you're definitely in that, you're probably in that bloodline, my friend. But he sent a follow-up email today and says, Josh, the Mormon grandparents are on my mom's side of the family. My family on that side is mostly Mormon and chock full of money. Mormonism does indeed mirror Freemasonry in ritual and in deeds. My parents are both Christian Baptists and were sorely opposed to my discussing Mormonism and the ancient alien theory on their visit last. I've read a good deal of the Book of Mormon and they happily provided. It was not an easy read, and I was easily distracted by memories of a South Park episode on the subject. Yeah, I've seen that one. that was good shit. But accurately, you know what they couldn't argue about? The parts, the Book of Mormon parts that they had in there were fucking accurately portrayed. Same thing with the Scientology one they did, you know, where they showed the Xenu shit. That was accurately portrayed. My grandparents are indeed higher up members of their church and travel from Arizona to the Missouri Temple Tabernacle at least a few times a year. I think the new temple is in Independence, Missouri. Maybe you should do a reading of the Book of Mormon or Doctrines and Covenants where it talks about the baptism of the dead on air. Thanks, Chad. Thank you, Chad. I'll look into that, man. And please continue to send me, you know, if you find out more info, more interesting things. You know, I mean, that's one of the things, folks, that I always suggest people do, like Chad's doing here. You know, I mean, if you find out you've got family members that have been in stuff in the past, we had that other guy yesterday that had to send us the email about his dad doing work with the guy that was in the Knights of Malta and all this stuff. You know, you'd be surprised. Neighbors, friends, family members, cousins, uncles, you talk to people about this stuff. It's just funny, you know, if you just bring it up and talk to people, inevitably you always run into somebody who knows somebody, you know, or has a family member or something that's connected to something or been involved in something. It's amazing. It's amazing the things you find out, little conversations. So I would highly suggest that people do that, you know, and again, Chad, if you, you know, find more stuff, send it over and I'll definitely read it here on the air. Keep us updated in your quest and your journey, my friend. I like to hear from people who are on, you know, there's Chad's on a little mission here. Very enlightening one. He's going to find out stuff that not only pertains to the larger picture of the priest class and the larger picture of control and secret societies and why these things were set up and bloodlines. But he's also going to learn things about himself and his family. And Chad, I mean, I can only tell you from experience, my friend, it'll only do you good. You know, some of the things you find when you're researching, you know, they're not always good. They don't always make you feel good, but they're not always bad either. But, you know, you have to, from the onset, be willing, you know, you have to be very prepared and be very open to your paradigms and your ideas shifting and changing and things that, you know, previously probably would seem insane. Most of this that we talk about on this show at one time or another to all of us seemed crazy, insane, unlikely. But the more evidence that piles up and the more evidence that you see, you know, the more you realize, oh my goodness, no, this is absolutely real. Let's see what else we have. Oh, by the way, I was talking to some folks, SciGirl and others in the chat room about this earlier tonight. This was sent to me from one of our listeners, Lori. Lori found posted on a website, they have announced when the next Council for National Policy meeting is going to be. So we have information on that for you tonight. And I want to put out the call for this because fact of the matter is, you know, I just have a few dollars to my name right now, and we're having a fundraiser this month to raise money to buy new equipment. So the fact that we haven't got anything substantial in towards that, really, coupled with all that, does not allow me to be able to travel out to this and cover it for my new film, The Super Hot Volume 2, and cover it for the show or anything else. I wish I could. If I had the cash, you know, I would, but it probably cost me, you know, a couple of grand to do the operation and get out there and get it done and all that stuff. But I'd love to do it if I had the cash. But there was a CMP meeting September 29th through the 30th, San Francisco, California. Somebody said, oh, they have it in San Francisco so they can, you know. possibly. It's a good guess. But either way, they always have these at Ritz-Carlton's. So this will undoubtedly be at the Ritz-Carlton in San Francisco. Council for National Policy meeting, September 29th to the 30th. If we have any listeners out there in California or in the area, or people that can go, let me tell you what we're really after here. And that is, you know, pictures, video, preferably both. People coming in and out. You know, fuck trying to go in and ask for a membership list like that one film did, Silhouette City or whatever it was. You know, I mean, that's a fail. You should have done your homework and known ahead of time. You can't just waltz up in there and ask them to let you in, or waltz up in there and ask for a membership list. They're not going to give it to you. They're highly secretive. But what you can do is you can sit across the street from this motherfucker, or you can sit inside of it, or you can rent yourself a room. That's what I'd like to do. I'd go out there and rent myself a room at the hotel that weekend, and I'd just hang out around the bar and hang out and have some drinks and just see who's there, you know? Take pictures, get video, see who comes in and out of that place. That's what we need. That's the one thing we haven't had. We have not had any Bilderberg-style coverage for a Council for National Policy meeting yet. And I want to do that. I mean, oh my God, man, if I had that, that would make my film, it would just be the absolute pinnacle. Oh my God, that would be the pinnacle if I had that. You know, trip me going to a Council for National Policy meeting, document the whole thing with my new video camera and going in there and, you know, get some pictures and some video. Cause I mean, that's, you know, the whole thing about that is there's, you know, there's nothing illegal about that. There's nothing, you know, you're not waltzing in there asking for a membership list. That's going to get you nowhere. I find the best, if the best way to approach these kind of things is to just be cool to people. You know, don't go up in there like, you know, Jones style, you know, junkyard dogging on people's faces. That's not going to get you anywhere. You know, these people, regardless of what I had, that was a big thing for me that I had to do when I was shooting video footage of some of these CMP clowns at a Freedom 21 conference in Dallas a couple of years ago. You know, I really had to man up and sack up at that moment and realize and really, you know, right there on the fly, because that was what I was going to do. I was going to go in there and, you know, junkyard dog these motherfuckers. And I just came to the realization while I was there, I was like, you know, that's just the wrong way. That's the wrong way. If I do that, I'm no better than any of these twofer clowns and Jones drones and everything else. Because regardless, you know, and maybe a lot of you don't out there don't feel the same way I do about this, and maybe it's old fashioned, I don't know, but I certainly don't feel this way about, you know, all of these clowns. But I mean, my thing about it is that regardless whether or not you like somebody or not, they deserve your respect. And it's just disrespectful to go and be, you know, because I tell you this, I didn't even say Jack Diddley Squat to fucking Larry Pratt. But as soon as I walked in, he was giving a little seminar on guns, and we walked in for about 5 minutes after it already started and took a seat in the back. Oh, dude, the piss dribble was running down his leg, dude. I'm not even shitting you. Homeboy thought I was coming for his ass. Oh, I'm not shitting you, dude. He thought I was Grim Reaper. He knew right who the fuck I was. He was expecting me. They'd been doing recon on my show. I'd known they had for a while because somebody called into my show a couple of months before that and was saying, it's just total COINTEL phone call, saying, making up all this stuff, saying that I hadn't tried to get Larry Pratt on my show when I actually had, and called me a liar. And you just said you did and you didn't. I said, no, I tried. and I got no response. You're a liar. You just said you tried to get him on your show and you never did. And I kept saying, no, I just told you I tried to get him on and I got no response. And then, so after he gives his little presentation, I walk up to him and I say, Mr. Pratt, my name's Josh Reeves. He looks down at my name tag. He reaches into his pocket and starts going, I'm like, well, you know, start looking like, am I going to have to fucking deck this cocksucker? I thought he was going for a knife or a gun or something, you know? And he starts pulling, he's handshaking, dude. He's handshaking. He's pulling out his car. And I was like, I want to see if I could get you on my show sometime to talk about some issues. I think what he thought I was going to do is that I think he thought I was going to go in there and just basically bum rush him and call him out and lay all the info out on him right there in front of his constituents, which I could have. But I had mercy on him because he was pissed scared. He thought it was coming for him. I'm not kidding you, dude. I don't know if he thought I was like somebody's family member. Maybe he had something involved with. I don't know. But he thought I was fucking coming for his ass, man. He thought I was about to pull his card straight up. I didn't have the heart after that. I didn't have the heart. I didn't, because, man, I mean, I know he was crapping his depends already. He thought, because I'm a pretty big fucking surly looking dude, you know. I mean, I roll up on you, like, you know, like, I mean business, and you don't know me. You're going to be like thinking I want some shit. That was, oh, man, that was one of the most priceless moments of my life. I got to tell you what. Too funny. Tabs are doing weird stuff tonight. Let's see what else we have in the email bag, which looks like it got inadvertently closed out of. No, there it is. So, yeah, CMP meeting September 29th through 30th, San Francisco. If anybody can, you know, maybe go and get footage of this and or something. I'd love to do it myself, but it just, you know, it's just not within... Not within in my financial ability to be able to do that. Let's see what else we have in the mailbag tonight. Stomping Evil in the chat room sent me this article. This is another example of I mean, prior to my film, Zero Volume 1, coming out in 2009, folks, literally there was no mention ever. Myself, I went through all news archives, video archives. Lee Rogers did as well. Prior to 2009, there were no media mentions that you could find of the Council for National Policy. Now you see it, you hear it regularly mentioned on, you know, Keith Olbermann's show or on CNN articles like this one. Michelle Bachmann critic Bill Pendergrass says news media are missing the real story. And you scroll down here, and he says right here in the middle of this article, the most important strength that Michelle Bachmann has is the fact that she's got the Council for National Policy behind her. That's a political organization founded by a bunch of John Birch Society supporters. They can stop a Republican presidential candidate cold. They stopped Rudy Giuliani from being the GOP presidential nominee last time around. All Republican presidential candidates since George W. Bush have come to them in person to get their backing. Their members of the CMP effectively control the conservative evangelical vote. Well, they came in under the CMP came in under Reagan. Poppy Bush was already assured anyway. So, they're actually right there. But they were, you know, they were active in politics prior to Bush being in office as well. I mean, they're the ones that actually laid the framework and the groundwork that would change public opinion about Bill Clinton and Democrats in general, that would set the stage for the staging of the Bush election. And that's exactly what they did. I mean, the plan to impeach Clinton was admittedly cooked up at a CMP meeting in 1996. Bob Barr, former CIA, head of the NRA, Bob Barr admits that in his book, The Meaning of Is. He admits it. right there. We cooked up the plan to impeach Clinton at the CMP meeting in 96. That's just one admission. But what people don't understand, they can't wrap their mind around, is why that's important. It's important because it signals that this group is much more than just a dinner group or a group that gets together and just has dinner and meets and, oh, we don't set policy in there. Well, maybe not. But how do you define policy? And whose policy are we talking about anyway here? You see? That's what I think is the key for Council for National Policy. It's that the policy that they're setting is outside of that the framework of the United States government. This is special interest shit out the ass. But what blows me away is that this stuff is now being entered into the political arena, into the mainstream political arena. And I think it's funny that, you know, these guys who now talk about this and reference this in articles and talk about it on mainstream news, not a damn single one of them will reference my work or, you know, give a hat tip towards the stuff that I brought out. But it's a fact. Before The Secret Right Volume 1 came out, you would never have seen this. So, I mean, that's a testament to the work I've done exposing this, because it's become a part of the nomenclature now. That's a fact. So that's huge. Let's see here. Olivia says the Mormons got the idea of the planet Kolob from Abraham. And Abraham was an Anunnaki, right? Ibrahim, so there you go. Also, a Mormon prophet sent missionaries to try to convert an Apollo astronaut so he could help convert moon beings to the gospel. I still don't think I'm being seen on the chat. Wasn't able to hear you if you answered my other email. Was called away, so I still don't know what's going on. Interesting show. Thank you. Okay. Check the archives, I suppose. Here's one from Mike. Mike says, "Hi, Josh. Great shows. Much appreciated for your past and ongoing work. Only been listening since Red Ice. And like many others, have not missed a show since. Love your dumb shit yokel and Satan voices, swearing and no fixed idea approach." Well, I'm glad you do. And some people do. That's funny. It's funny. It's the people that, I mean, like the guy earlier, you know, griping about not being able to control the way I do my show and the content of it. And, you know, not being somebody who even donates a dime. It's funny that the people who do donate to our work and support what we do, they don't even always agree with the things that I'm saying or what I'm saying all the time. You know what I mean? Just because these people support what I do and make financial contributions to what I do doesn't necessarily mean that they like that either. You know, there may be some of those that don't like the things that I say and the cussing I say and the vulgarness of it. But one thing about my audience has always been is they're, you know, everybody's free thinkers here. Everybody's individuals. It's, you know, they still see something of value in what I do, even though they may not always be on the same page as me or always 100% agree with it or anything else. That's just life, though. That's the way it is. But that the idea that, you know, I've got to conform what I'm doing so it fits into what you can digest, I mean, that's not my problem. I have heaps of synchronicity around during your shows. Everybody seems to. Synchronicity seems to follow me everywhere. It always has. I have heaps of synchronicity around during your shows and some subtle, some are subtle and some fucking bitch slap you in the face. An example, just at the start of last week, was cleaning an old USB stick to make room for documentaries for a mate. Had heaps of USBs, but always giving them out to try and get people thinking and like you accurately say, people are trained to believe if it's not TV, it can't be true. Anyway, I had a copy of Idiocracy on it, which was like a couple of years ago, and I thought I'll keep that one on there. My mate will get a laugh out of it. The same day playing MP3s, listened to an album I hadn't played for in months, and this song At Midnight by Bliss in Esso, Aussie hip-hop artist, was a track, and thought about your show since it starts at midnight. Later on during your show, not only did you talk about Idiocracy, but you talked about your dream about zombified Billy Joe Armstrong's head exploding after getting hit with a spiked bat. And the song has a line, "Cause I know how to fight back. I'll turn this mic stand into a spiked bat." Then you move to a news story about free speech and other line states. They treat freedom of speech like a breach of the code. Pretty much your view on the topic. This is just one example, but the more profound and personal ones have opened up other areas and have given me a better understanding and affirmation about the direction I should go. You couldn't be more right when you say once you acknowledge the universe, it responds for real. It does. It absolutely does. It's absolute truth. It is a truism. Once you acknowledge it, that then it opens up to you. But when you close it off, but you know, that's what atheism and blind following any religion is both of those things are designed to do. They get you so far into one area that you don't have access to other energies and other things outside of that. Only when you're open to things is that allowed to come through. And that's just amazingly profound to me to see the you know, I get synchronistic things happen to me all the time with you guys and listeners and just all the time. But then for somebody to have that with, I mean, that's simultaneous, man. We're all connected. It's like once you connect to it and realize that it's there, we all can see effects of this. I'm not sure if you had Max Egan on your show, but he could be a good guest. He has knowledge of the past from the original people of Australia about the Anunnaki, Australian pyramids, destroyed by the military, colonists rewriting the song lines by getting Aborigine children to sing Christian hymns on the song lines. And get this, Masonic first settlers could communicate with Aborigines via the use of Masonic and Egyptian hand signals. Wow. Source, Aboriginal men of high degree, initiation, and sorcery in the world's oldest tradition. I need to get that. That'd be a good one to read. Wow. That's incredible. Because there's Aborigine drawings that go back thousands of years where they show European-looking people, you know, next to a snake biting its tail and these, like, spaceships and aliens-looking things out of it. It's amazing. While on the Aussie theme, I was shocked to hear that I was the only Australian donator, if I'm mistaken, correct me. So Aussies, throw some cash Josh's way, because if you think we're safe here, forget it. Australia is totally controlled by this global power structure, and we need people with the courage and energy to get the info out so people get the drive to find out more for themselves and then learn to think for themselves. A possible book to read is the Urantia book, sometimes called the Blue Book. I think it's most likely disinfo, and a new program of the Cry Story, and teases us with more of a galactic overview and a structure, but copping out on the real good info, stating it's a need-to-know basis. It's a complex read, but since most of the religious stories are similar, perhaps just different tellings of the real events, you can find common factors and characters by their actions. Also contains history of man from the first ape twins that had thumbs through to the colored races, red, blue, yellow, and orange people, each one in a different region, and later the introduction of the off-world endemic strain, or violet race, primordial Adam and Eve, tells us of the waning, warring red race, which got moved to the American continent, a bit like in the Lost Book of Enki, and talk of those that were left here and made mortal by being denied the heavenly life circuits. For their part in the Lucifer Rebellion, their offspring had extra abilities. Then it has a complete retelling of the Jesus story. The fact that it modernizes the story and lays the groundwork for the combining of all religions and reworking the Watchers into aliens in service of some galactic council, which serves an even higher authority. The book came out in the 50s to sit around for a while until it was needed, which may give it added validity. Some people interviewed have mistakenly said Blue Book when they're referring to Blue Beam. Maybe Blue Brain wrote the book. Well, what they're talking about when they say Blue Book is they're not talking about that Blue Book. They're talking about the American operation called Project Blue Book, which was an American UFO research study that, you know, went to study UFOs. And they said, oh, we found no evidence of UFOs. Freeman talked about it on Red Ice once, so he might know if it's worthwhile. But you and the Moonbats have a way of finding out what has not been said is more telling. Then again, it may be genuine. Could be the aliens are here to help us. I need to look into that one for sure. I don't like my reference point anymore, and I am open to change my mind. That's good. Quick note, Lost Book of Enki, the mountaintops fashioned after the flood, could be a hitching post of the sun and the hitching post of the moon at Machu Picchu. One outside, one inside, and alcoves for crystals. Ah, with pictures included. Very interesting. Thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate that email there. Here's one from Cameron. He says, hi, Josh. Was catching up on the few shows on the archive and got about halfway through last Thursday's show during my morning coffee. You got an email from Zohair, I think it is, and he mentioned about how it seems each astrological age is provided with a new god. He mentioned how the age of Pisces was probably Inanna's, and the coming Aquarian age will probably be Enki's. He then went on to say how Nike bears Enki's symbol, and how everyone in the world really does wear Nike, and we're being branded as his slaves. So later today at the gym, a few hours after hearing that, there was a dude working out in one of those loose A-shirts with a really low-cut, huge armhole, so a bit of his torso was exposed. What caught me was out of the corner of my eye was a tattoo of the Nike symbol on his lower torso. So it seems some of us are literally being branded. I don't think it's just a coincidence that when cattle are marked with red-hot irons, it's also called branding. Right. That's what they call, they give it a logo, branding. What's your branding like? Yep, that's correct. The Nike swoop is also yet another stylized depiction of Saturn. In this case, just the rings representing the elite's obsession with laws, time control, boundaries, structure, death, darkness, and their worship of such things. I also thought it was interesting how not 2 hours had passed from hearing that I literally saw it in reality. Now, look at that, ladies and gentlemen. This is what I'm talking about. 2 emails in a row. People listen to the show. They go out. They see synchronicities. They catch something. Boom, it's there. It's right in front of them. This is what I've been trying to get across to you for 4 years since I've been doing this show. Is that if you just start to pay attention and you start to look into these things for themselves, you will see this stuff everywhere. And you will really see how all pervasive it is, and you will be able to then understand how it all truly connects. And once you have so many examples, it makes it a lot more easy for the individual to go out and show somebody else this stuff. That's how we're going to reach critical mass. When everybody has the eyes to see, the sheep will cease to be sheep. They will no longer have any reason to go off blind to the slaughter. That's the goal. But I'm just blown away by that. I mean, CNN's referencing CMP material. We've got people on all ends of the globe that are listening to the show and are having synchronistic moments that can't be just explained away with coincidence. I mean, this is why I just get so frustrated that we can't get the amount of money that we need to get our work done. Because we're on to something special here that's once in a lifetime. And if my work goes away, man, we're all going to be missing out on something that I think is special that we all need. There's a reason why I'm doing this. And that kind of stuff, like these emails, just proves that to me, you know? I thought also thought it was interesting how not 2 hours had passed from hearing that. I literally saw it in reality. Of course, I've grown used to coincidences such as this. Some call them synchronicities. They happen all the time if you're paying attention. That is correct. I suppose such is the nature of this 3D matrix. So if all things are cyclical, fractal, and possess duality, could all the Saturnian symbolism everywhere be not only communicating the death of something, of what I have no idea, perhaps what we perceive to be three-dimensional reality, or maybe the human species as we know it. I think it's what we perceive as 3D reality, yeah. Ascending up to other, you know, fourth-dimensional, five-dimensional, on up to 12-dimensional bodies. But also a rebirth. After all, Saturn's day ends the week, but always begins anew on Sunday. Just like after cold, dark death of winter is always summer, and we can always count on the sun rising, warming, and brightening the world after a cold, dark night. Oh yeah, and I'm always making my way through William Bramley's The Gods of Eden. And I remember he also mentioned that from all the evidence he had gathered, the Enki entity was, or is, relatively more benevolent than in Lil or other Anunnaki. I guess that's something to be optimistic about. So I'm with you, man, when you say everything is fucked, but not everything is fucked. So, well, thank you, Cameron. We should get that on a bumper sticker or a t-shirt and say the glory out. Everything's fucked, but it's not fucked. You know, because people don't understand what that means. You know, everything's fucked. The whole world's fucked. It's going to hell in a handbasket. Everything's crazy. It's just fucked 7 ways to Sunday, but it's not. Meaning, you know, that doesn't mean, just because everything's fucked doesn't mean that we quit and we give up and we don't still, you know, want to be actively involved in being as knowledgeable about this stuff as we all can be. Let's see what else we have here tonight. Thanks, Cameron, for that email. That was a good one, man. Wondering if you went to the university to see Pat Boone. That was on Sunday. No, I talked about that last night on the show. I didn't get to go. I didn't have the money to go. Didn't have enough to go and get tickets and gas to go up there, expenses and all that stuff. That's, you know, it costs money to do that stuff. And when I don't have it, it, you know, we lose opportunities to have stuff in films. That was definitely one. Here's one from Enrico. Dear Josh, I was reading some material on Barbara Aho's website, Watching to Prayer, that mentioned the JBS as a CFR and Communist Party USA front that definitely ties in with your view on the leadership of the JBS, all Jesuit trained. That's not my view, man. I mean, I, you know, that's not my view. It's a fact. An absolute documented, admitted fact that all heads of the John Birch Society have been Jesuit trained. Pat Buchanan was Jesuit trained. He, I have ABC News, Peter Jennings admitting that in the Secret Right Volume 1. I'm going to show you that clip again in Secret Right Volume 2 because it relates to, as it relates to Jones, because Alex Jones worked on Pat Buchanan's campaign in 1996. Alex Jones has all these other connections to Jesuits, you know, the Gibson family, Hutton Gibson, Mel Gibson, Charlie Sheen, their Jesuit family there. I mean, he's got all these other Jesuit connections, and we're supposed to think that's just a coincidence? My ass. It's amazing how sinister these CMP shills are. Ron Paul's von Mises Austrian school ideas are exactly what the Jewish bankers pray for every night. You're right. I can't argue with that. Again, you know, these Jewish bankers are, they have to bank. Who do you think controls, you know how many fucking trillions of dollars the Catholic Church and the Vatican have gotten in through the years from, you know, people paying their tribute and you know, collection plates and all that? Oh, man. Huge amounts of money. Billions, trillions of dollars. Well, somebody's got to run all that and deal with all that, don't you? Well, there you go, Jewish bankers. And then that puts out the perfect front that they're the ones running everything. But they have bosses, too. Paul says that he is for the independence of the U.S., but has advocated on the House floor in 2003 for an international gold standard. And, of course, Van Mises was friends with Otto von Habsburg, one of the prime movers of the pan-European movement. Also, are you familiar with Robert Temple's book, The Serious Mystery? That would be a good book to read on during the show. Thanks, Enrico. I think I did start to read that one time, Enrico, but it just wasn't a very good book for the radio. But I am familiar with it. I have read some of it on air, and it's a good book. But yeah, good stuff, Enrico. Appreciate the email there. Well, I think that's about all the emails we've got tonight. I don't even think I want to do news tonight. None of this stuff is really important. I'll do a few here. CMP member Rick Santorum says that people are living too long. Let's see. You're in the Council for National Policy, which is already a eugenics-based group anyway. And now you're saying people are living too long. I think we can close the books on you, Rick Santorum, you piece of crap. I got to read this one, though, because this is the most fucked up news story I've read all week. I'm sorry. Eel removed from man's bladder after entering his penis during a beauty spa. Zhang Nan was bathing with live eels to cleanse his skin when one rogue serpent took a liking to his manhood. The eel treatment in question is a similar concept to the popular London spas that offer fish pedicures. Thinking that the eels would make him look 10 years younger, Nan dived into the water and let them feast upon layers of his dead skin. But after laying in the spa bath, Nan felt a sharp pain and realized a small eel was working its way up his urethra and into his bladder. Oh my God. I climbed into the bath and I could feel all the eels nibbling my body, but then suddenly I felt a severe pain and realized a small eel had gone into the end of my penis. Oh my God. No. Okay, that's enough cringing now. It's horrible, though. We know. Rushing himself to a hospital, the man underwent a 3-hour operation to remove the 6-inch eel, which was dead by the time the doctors found it. Now, listen. Oh, come on, man. Listen to what guess what the surgeon's name was? You can't make this up. The surgeon's name was Jin Wang. So Mr. Wang took the eel out of this other guy's wang, and he said that because of the eel's slippery nature, it was able to make a smooth entry into the genitals of Nan. The diameter of the urethra in a man's penis is just a little narrower, but because eels are quite slippery, it worked its way as a lubricant. Its body worked as a lubricant, and so it got into the penis smoothly. Oh my God. And there's a picture of the scalpel and the picture of the eel. That's what it looked like. My goodness. That thing went into his dick hole. That is not good. Not good. Hey, today's was the 13th. 9/13 the birthday of lead singer of Megadeth, Dave Mustaine. So happy birthday to Dave Mustaine. They have an interesting article posted here today. 10 things you didn't know about Dave Mustaine. Well, I knew all of these, honestly, except number one, and I was very sort of like, oh, well, there you go. Because, you know, I've seen little things connected with Dave that have been questionable. I think he's one of my favorite, you know, metal bands and singers, and, you know, I'm a huge Megadeth fan. But you know, I started noticing that he would, not tour with certain bands because he said they used occult symbology, and he had a problem with that because he's a Christian now. And I started, you know, yet his stuff is littered with occult symbology, even stuff that since he's, you know, converted to Christian, his last album, Endgame, named after the Alex Jones film. I mean, he's wearing a double headed eagle shirt in that. I saw a concert video where they were playing in Argentina, called that One Night in Buenos Aires or something like that. One Night in Argentina or something like that. It's a home video they put out a couple years ago. And at the very end of that, he raises his hands up for like 2 seconds and you can see a big, bright Maltese cross belt buckle on. And I just went, how dumb do you think that, you know, I guess that's how dumb, I guess, most metalheads are. I'm not a big metalhead or big metal fan like some metal bands, but I always like Megadeth. But, you know, I'd seen all this stuff where, you know, that the song that we played, our 5 minute warning song, 5 minutes before you know the show's going to start, we play Hangar 18 by Megadeth. And I've seen interviews where, you know, people are asking about that song and stuff. And, oh, it's about aliens, about this thing. You know, I'm not into that crap. I don't believe in that crap. That's bullshit. But, you know, Nick Menza, our drummer, was all off into it. And he has all these other songs, like The Conjuring and all about black magic and five magics and all this stuff. But listen to this. The number one thing you didn't know about Dave Mustaine, he is well connected with very important people. Mustaine told Metal Injection last year about his ties to important figures in the U.S. government. Really, Dave? I've been invited to the White House. I've been invited to the Pentagon. I've got friends in the Secret Service and the FBI. So if you learn one thing from this list, don't mess with Dave Mustaine. Friends in the White House, friends in the Pentagon, friends in the Secret Service and FBI. Really? And he's going on Jonesy's show talking about stuff. Yet, you know, you don't see him coming on this show. Huh. I mean, the music industry is littered with it. You generally don't get anywhere or to that level of success without being co-opted into these groups and brotherhoods and this stuff along the way. That's just a part of it, you know. But when it comes to the music, I'm willing to leave that at the door. I don't think about that kind of stuff when I'm into the music. Is the music for me. I don't, if I didn't like everybody whose music I like because of their politics or their involvements with things, there wouldn't be anything to listen to. But separately aside from that, in my mind, that should tell you shouldn't trust a damn thing that he says on any shows like Alex Jones and others. Plus, he's, you know, we've talked about stuff he said in the past where he said that he got to go to Israel and go to all the places that the goy don't get to go with a special military pass. I mean, you know, and you know what goy is. That's the way that Jews call white people the N-word. And they can deny it, and they continue to deny it all up and down the goddamn wall, but we know it's true. That's the way they call white people the N-word. They call them goy. And the Jews will swear from now until they're fucking, you know, the end of all bar mitzvahs that it's not true, but it is, or we know it is, and they know it is. Let's see what else we have. I'm trying to see if I had anything. Oh, this is great. CMP member Alan Curious, Carlton Banks. Former Saturday Night Live cast member Victoria Jackson and former Republican presidential candidate Alan Curious, treated passengers on WorldNet Daily's Tea Party at Sea Cruise to their rendition of the award-winning ballad Over the Rainbow. Why? I mean, Alan Keyes, why is that news? Alan Keyes and Victoria Jackson sing Over the Rainbow on a boat, and that's news. And the video is on WorldNet Daily, of course. CMP approved news outlet. Yeah. Alan Keyes, what a piece of work he is. Another one of these commies in right-wing clothing. Guy was fucking Marx is written all over him. U.S. unable to account for 16,000 kilograms of exported enriched uranium. Now, you understand that if any country in the Middle East were to ever come out with information like this, that we would be in a worldwide lockdown in just a few minutes, right? Well, that should tell you right there that the United States is probably building a dirty bomb they're gonna cook up and blow up somewhere and blame it on fucking terrorists or right-wing extremists. My God. The United States could only account for 1,160 out of 17,500 kilograms of highly enriched uranium weapon-usable nuclear material exported to 27 countries in a response to a 1992 congressional mandate, according to a Government Accountability Office report released last week. The world today is dramatically different than when it was when most U.S. nuclear cooperation agreements were negotiated. That's what they always say. Well, the world's different than it was when the time of the founding fathers wrote the Constitution. That's why we need to change it and blah, blah, blah. And you don't have any rights because the world's different than it was then, so you have no rights. What? Or maybe we didn't have any before, and now they're just telling us that. That's probably more accurate there. Many new threats have emerged, and nuclear proliferation risks have increased significantly. In another disquieting revelation, the GAO points out that in the 55 visits from 1994 through 2010, U.S. teams found that countries who received nuclear components met international security guidelines only about 50% of the time. The agencies have not systematically visited countries believed to be holding the highest proliferation risk of U.S. quantities of nuclear material, or systematically revisited facilities not meeting international physical security guidelines in a timely manner. The U.S. agencies responsible for monitoring the proliferation and negotiating the export of nuclear materials, the Department of Energy, Department of State, and Nuclear Regulatory Commission, do not have a systematic process for evaluating the physical security of U.S. nuclear material in overseas. In some cases, the agencies have relied upon reported thefts of U.S. nuclear material to assess the security at foreign facilities. So we got 1,600 kilograms of enriched uranium that's just out there in the world that our government can't account for. That's just great. But yet you're a kook if you say these guys are probably going to hook up a dirty bomb to blame on Iran sometime soon. Unbelievable shit. Well, that's all the news I want to get into tonight. There wasn't a lot anyway. I'm ready to get into Lost Book of Enki for you here tonight, but I need to... take a breather and come back, and we'll get into the Lost Book of Enki for you here tonight on the show. This is the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Stay with us. September 19th, 2011 marks 4 years of broadcasting for the Global Reality Show. In that time, we've exposed many important and invaluable pieces of information concerning the global power structure, hidden and occult text, ancient archaeology, secret societies, ETs, the priest class, and so much more. With no outside funding, sponsors, or advertisement, this places all the well-being of our work and research into the hands of people like you. In order to continue our work and to make it bigger and better, the Global Reality is having a 4-year anniversary fundraiser to take our quest of information critical mass to a new and before unseen level. Unfortunately, technology becomes aged and not much is left after paying operating costs each month. This is a very critical time to reach people, and with your financial support, we can redouble our efforts. Please visit www.theglobalreality.com today and make a safe and secure donation using our chip-in banner or PayPal donate button at the site. Why give your support to a phony political stooge when you can support real underground media by the people? I'm Josh Reeves, and this is the Global Reality Radio Network. Back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here tonight for another late night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. In this segment, we're going to be getting back into our reading of the Lost Book of Enki for you here tonight. Page 307. That's where we're picking up tonight, the top of page 307. For those of you following along at home, my website, again, where this broadcast originates from is www.theglobalreality.com. This is our 4-year anniversary of the show. 4 years of broadcasting. September 19, 2007 is when we kicked it off. And this is our 4-year anniversary. And I know times are very difficult for everyone right now. And when the times are hard for everybody, it makes it increasingly difficult on us here to be able to continue our work and stay alive from month to month. We do that with the support of you, the listening audience, because we're really trying to practice what we preach here and get away from the model of advertising and, you know, corporate radio and corporate sponsorships and, you know, having to sell products just to get information out. And that's something I refused to do when I started this network in 2009. And the only way we continue that is with your help. And we're very low on funds right now, just a few dollars in our account. And we've got a long way to go on our chip-in banner to reach that goal so we can get new equipment for the broadcast. And because everything's just getting old and worn out. And if I'm going to continue, we need to get in that much. People are giving millions of dollars to these phony political candidates out there. And we're just trying to raise around $3,000 to buy some new stuff. I know that somebody out there feels that what I'm doing here with this stuff is worth that much. So please help us out if you can. TheGlobalReality.com. Chip and banner is there for that. Donate button if you just want to make, you know, put in basically any amount you want there and just have a secure donation, do it that way. We also have a P.O. box. If you absolutely can't use PayPal, you please use that option there. There you go. So please support us if you can, folks. We got to make it through this week, much less all the way through to the this month. So now this is the account of how fate did lead to destiny and how step by step, some and long forgotten times taken made the great calamity happen. Now let it for all time be recorded and remembered. This sounds like this is going to be important stuff here. When the decision to use the weapons of terror was made, Enlil kept two secrets to himself. To no one before the terrible decision was taken did Enlil reveal the secret of Galzu's dream vision. To no one until the fateful decision was made did Enlil disclose the hiding place, disclose his knowledge of the terror's hiding place. When, despite all protestations, the council permitted to use the weapons of terror. When Enki, angry and distraught, left the council chamber, in his heart, Enki was smiling. Only he knew where the weapons were hidden. So Enki thought. For it was he, before Enlil had come to Earth, who with Abgal in the palace, in the place unknown, he did hide the weapons. that Abgal was exiled by Enlil to a place disclosed was unknown to Enki. When Enki heard this secret in his heart, he harbored a wishful thought that for such a long sojourn, the weapons of terror would have evaporated. Little did Enki expect the long sojourn would cause a calamity as never before known on Earth. Thus it was that without Enki needing, Enlil disclosed the hiding place to the two heroes. Those seven weapons of terror in a mountain they abide to them, Enlil said. In a cavity inside the earth they dwell, with the terror to clad them is required. Then the secret of how the weapons awaken from their deep sleep, Enlil did reveal to them. So these weapons, these seven weapons, are buried in a mountain somewhere deep inside of the earth. And they're referring to them as being asleep. And they have to be woken up. So what are they referring to here? Could it be that they're referring to almost as what we refer to as a computer in sleep mode? You know, it looks like it's off. I mean, it's on, basic functionality, but it's there, but you had to pull it out of sleep mode for it to work. You could be what they're talking about here. Before the two sons, one of Enlil, one of Enki, they departed to the hiding place. Enlil said words of forewarning to them. When the weapons are used, the place of the chariots must be vacated by the Anunnaki. The cities must be spared. The people must not perish. In his sky ship, Nergal soared to the hiding place. Ninurta was delayed by his father. A word to his son alone, Enlil wished to say. A secret to him alone to reveal. About the prophecy of Galzu and the choosing of Ibram to Ninurta, he told. Hot-headed is Nergal. Make sure that the cities are spared, that Ibram is forewarned, to Ninurta, Enlil said. When Ninurta arrived at the place of the weapons, Nergal had already brought the weapons from out of the cavity. As their MEs from the long slumber he awakened, to each one of the seven, Nergal gave a task name. The one without rival, the first weapon he called, the blazing flame he named it, the second. The one who with terror crumbles, he called the third. Mountain melter, he called the fourth. Mountain melter, wow. You know, one weapon that just melts mountains, well, that's good quality. Wind that the rim of the world seeks, he named the fifth. And the one who above and below no one spares was the sixth. The seventh was filled with monstrous venom, and it was called the vaporizer of living things. So these are seven different weapons, all that have a different ability. With Anu's blessing, the seven were given to Ninurta and Nergal, with therewith to wreak destruction. When Ninurta arrived at the place of the weapons of terror, Nergal was ready to destroy and annihilate. I shall kill the son and I will annihilate the father. Nergal was shouting with vengeance. The lands they covet will vanish. The sinning cities I will upheaval. So did Nergal, enraged, announce. Valiant Nergal, will you the righteous with the unrighteous destroy? So did Ninurta, his comrade, ask. The instructions of Enlil are clear. To the selected targets, the way I will lead. Behind me, you will follow. The decision of the Anunnaki is known to me, Nergal said to Ninurta. For 7 days and seven nights, the signal from Enlil, the two awaited. As was his intention, When his waiting was complete, Marduk returned to Babili. In the presence of his followers, with weapons armed, he declared his supremacy. 1,736 was the count of earth years then. On that day, on that fateful day, Enlil sent the signal to Ninurta. To Mount Mashu, Ninurta departed. Behind him, Nergal followed. The mount and the plain in the heart of the fourth region, Ninurta surveyed from the skies. With a squeezing in his heart, he gave a signal and a sign to Ninurta. Keep off to him, he signaled. Then the first terror weapon from the skies, Ninurta let loose. The top of Mount Mashu, with a flash, it sliced off. The mountain's innards in an instant melted. Above the place of the celestial chariots, the second weapon he unleashed. With a brilliance of seven suns, the plain's rocks were made into a gushing wound, which just liquefied them. The earth shook and crumbled, and the heavens after the brilliance were darkened. With burnt and crushed stones, the plain of the chariots was covered. Of all the forests that had surrounded the plain, only tree stems were left standing. It is done. Ninurta, from his skyship, his black divine bird, he shouted. The control that Marduk and Nabu so coveted, forever of it they will be deprived. Then, to emulate Ninurta, Nergal desired to be Era the Annihilator, his heart urged him. Following the King's Highway to the Verdant Valley of the Five Cities, he flew. In the Verdant Valley, where Nabu, the people, was converting, Nergal planned to squash him as a caged bird. Over the five cities, one after the other, Era upon each of the skies dropped a terror weapon. The five cities of the valley he finished off, and they were overturned to desolation. With fire and brimstones, they were upheavaled. All that lived there was turned to a vapor. By the awesome weapons were mountains toppled. Where the sea waters were barred, the bolt broke open. Down into the valley, the sea's waters poured. By the waters that flooded, the valley was flooded. When upon the city's ashes the waters poured, steam was rising from them to the heavens. It is done, Era and his skyship shouted. In Nurgle's heart, there was no more vengeance. Surveying their evil handiwork, the two heroes were puzzled by what they saw. By a darkening of the skies that were followed by brilliances, a storm began to blow. Swirling within a dark cloud, gloom from the skies as an evil wind carried. As the day wore on, the sun was obliterated with darkness on the horizon. At nighttime, a dreaded brilliance skirted its edges. The moon and its rising it made disappear. When dawn the next morning came from the west, from the upper sea, a storm wind began blowing. The dark brown cloud directed it eastward. Toward the settled lands did the cloud spread. Wherever it reached, death to all that lives, it delivered mercilessly. Sounds like the Black Plague. From the Valley of No Pity, spawned by the brilliances towards Shamir, the death was carried. To Enlil and Enki, Ninurta and Nergal, the alarm sounded. Unstoppable, the evil wind delivers death to all. Enki and Enlil transmitted the alarm to the gods of Shamir. Escape, escape, to all of them they cried out. Let the people disperse. Let the people hide. From their cities, the gods did flee like frightened birds from their nests. Escaping they were. The people of the lands by the evil storm's hand were clutched. Futile was the running. Stealthily was the death, like a ghost, the fields and the cities it attacked. The highest walls, the thickest walls, like floodwaters it passed. No door could shut it out. No bolt could turn it back. Those who were behind the locked doors hid inside their houses. and were felled like flies. Those who in the streets fled were in the streets as the corpses piled up. Cough and phlegm filled the chests, and their mouths were filled with spittle and foam. Yeah, it's causing them to foam at the mouth. It's a black, straight up black death. As the evil wind, that was Ancient Aliens was about this past week. And here's an example of that. Our good buddy Tsoukalos Apocalypse says probably the funniest fucking thing that's ever been said on an Ancient Alien series, and that is penis sheath. Some people say this is a penis sheath. I was like, Jesus Christ, just call it what it is, a fucking cock holster. Here is a 5,000-year-old cock holster that I believe was found in Eric von Daniken's asshole. As the evil wind were unseen to the people, engulfed their mouths, were drenched with blood. Slowly over the lands, the evil wind blew. From west to east, over plains and mountains, it traveled. Everything that lived behind it was dead and dying. People and cattle, all alike, perished. The waters were poisoned. In the fields, all vegetation withered. From Eridu in the south to Sapar in the north, the evil wind did overwhelm the land. Bibili, where Marduk's supremacy was declared, was spared by the evil wind. So Babylon, Bibili, was, interestingly enough, spared by the wind. So that's the end of the 13th tablet. We have here the synopsis of the 14th tablet. And we'll go ahead and read this tonight. I'll probably read it again before we start the 14th tablet tomorrow. Synopsis of the 14th tablet. Bibili, Marduk's chosen center, survives the calamity. Enki sees it as an omen of Marduk's inevitable supremacy. Enlil ponders the past, fate, and destiny, accepts Marduk's supremacy and retreats to faraway lands. The brothers bid a sentimental goodbye. Enki sees the past as a guide for telling the future. He decides to commit it all to record for posterity. And colophon by the scribe in Dubsar. So 314 is what we'll pick up next time. And that's interesting. That brings us up to what this whole thing was supposedly about. And it's interesting when you look, when you read this, and you know, some people say, oh, this is bullshit and this is just Zachariah Stitching stuff. And it, you know, it very well may be. But the fact of the matter is that these texts exist. They are there. They are real. And you can't deny that the things that we're being warned about in this are exactly the things that have taken over our planet. And that's why all this stuff was taken and turned into religion and phony fairy tales without any context. Because if we truly know what happened in the past of our ancestors, and possibly on other planets happened to them, according to this genealogical and historical record of Nibiru, then this is a warning that we should all take serious heed to so that we don't go the same way that these people who created us went on their planet, and that just seems to be exactly the way the New World Order wants to take us. Time to pull our heads out of our asses and realize that this, you know, this is what they've been hiding. And I know there's more that we haven't found yet that they've probably got in the Vatican Library, but we'll get there. Thanks to everybody for tuning in tonight. Again, folks, we are in desperate need of your support right now. TheGlobalReality.com. Use the chip in banner with the donate button. Please help us meet our goal so we can take this thing to the next level, because it's time. We can't wait another year. We've got to do this now. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you. We'll see you next time on the broadcast. Have a great one. Take care.